This is Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The mayor of East Chicago told an audience this week that the state of the city is good and getting better. Copeland says even with the lead contamination crisis, there are plenty of successes for the city, and he says the future is bright. Lakeshore Public Radio Stephen Lattimore attended the event.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the mayor of East Chicago, Anthony Copeland.
It is an honor as a public servant to stand before you today and report on the state of the city.
The State of the State address from Mayor Anthony Copeland of East Chicago was a laundry list of achievements, from bringing in new businesses, hiring more police and firefighters, getting more equipment for the city, and infrastructure upgrades from lighting to streets. But it was also an opportunity for the mayor to talk about how he has dealt with the lead crisis.
We took immediate action, including the painful decision to relocate people out of the affected area. We asked for assistance from the state and federal government. Our strong will has resulted in Governor Holcomb's declaration of an emergency.
Should the city be defined by the lead crisis? I know you rattled off a ton of stuff that's happening in addition to the lead crisis.
A city is defined by its people and the spirit of its people. We know that the same industries that made us great have legacy costs behind them. Those costs will be removed, the land will be reclaimed, and the greatness of the people will restore it. So I have no doubt that the future is bright.
Some of the folks who had been moved out of West Calumet,
yes,
are saying they have to move into the projects in Chicago, and they're frankly scared. What do you say to them?
Well, that's not really true. You have to remember that people then had 10 months to move wherever they wanted to move. We fought for them to get vouchers. They got vouchers. And they could have moved anywhere, I think, except for Hawaii and Alaska. So you had 10 months. And now, even now, we're helping them even with the relocation toward the end. We freed up other units that we have in our North Harbor area, and some people have rejected that. So their fate is in their hands, but what I can truly say that we will work with them to the end. But it is unacceptable. It is a public safety issue. And I will not allow people to reside in an area that will affect their children, because years and years later, their children are going to ask, why did they leave us here? And when they go to ask that question, they're going to say it was not because of Mayor Copeland.
Around the country, African-American areas and minority areas, we're finding out they have all this dumping. You feel that's what happened here?
No. I think what happened here was that we are a city, and even our surrounding sister cities, Hammond, East Chicago, and Whiting, we were cities that was built on industry. I mean, the steel, oil, and with those, it's legacy costs. And I think with strong environmental regulations now, people are being asked to clean these things up, and this is what's being revealed.
Are you concerned that the EPA appears to be turning back a lot of the stuff that was supposed to protect people from this now? That this new Trump era means a lot of these things that were put in place to protect folks are now being done away with?
I think that at the end of the day, the people have to decide what they want this country to be and what they want to leave their children. And that's what we settle in a ballot box.
In East Chicago, Stephen Lattimore.
Society of Innovators in Northwest
Public
Indiana
Radio
is once again putting out its innovation awards, going out to the Energy Academy. It's actually a collaborative effort that is between the LaPorte County Career and Technical Education Center, as well as NIPSCO. And we have the director of the center, Audra Peterson, with us, the recipient of the award this time. Audra, thanks for being with us here on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm glad that you're with us today. Tell us first about the center and what in general it helps do.
Okay. Well, we are a career center that serves all of LaPorte County students, and then we also have New Buffalo students that come to us as well, since we're close. There are actually six high schools that we serve, so it's all high school students, ages, they're juniors and seniors. And we serve La Crosse High School, Westville, South Central, LaPorte, Michigan City High School, and New Prairie. So it serves all of the juniors and seniors in LaPorte County. and as I mentioned, to New Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And we have several programs that we offer in the various areas. And our goal is to provide the students, our theme, if you will, is Your Door to the Future. And our goal is to help students find out what they're interested in from a career standpoint before they go and spend a bunch of money on college. And in some cases, many of our programs, they can actually get a job right out of high school. So this gives them an opportunity to kind of get a feel for something that they're interested in before their parents spend or they spend a bunch of money to get involved in a particular field or pathway.
I know that one of the things that certainly is in big demand here in Northwest Indiana more and more these days are people who can fill jobs in the energy, the electronics, the utility industries. And I guess that is how the Energy Academy that NIPSCO has helped sponsor and you're working with at the center came about, isn't it?
That's correct. NIPSCO approached us about 4 years ago, Chris, and asked us to apply for a potential program that they were wanting to start at the high school level that could feed into their programs. And what they were experiencing or are experiencing was they said by 2021, they were going to lose potentially 60% of their workforce due to retirement. Mm-hmm. And they kind of called it the silver tsunami. And so we applied for that in partnership with Michigan City Area Schools, all the other high schools in LaPorte County, and the Career Center. And we worked for about 2 years on curriculum. We went around to several locations throughout the United States looking at programs with best practices to figure out what it was that we needed. And as we sat down with NIPSCO, we wanted to find out what their curriculum was, what was going to be the baseline curriculum for an entry-level employee at NIPSCO, or that could be a foundational program that could lead to any type of career in NIPSCO. And in the energy industry, there are over 650 careers. Different types of careers from the basic meter reader, which these days is not just walking from place to place and writing something down. It's actually done electronically. So they do have to have some electronic background and computer knowledge to be able to do that.
Yeah, they have to have these smart meters, these new meters. In fact, NIPSCO is very, very big about that. They're in the process, continuing the process, actually, of converting all of their meters over to this type of meter so they can be easily read, and they're more accurate than the old style, I know.
Exactly. And all the way up to the engineers. They need electrical, mechanical engineers, and so we have the program actually starts out, they can take a course that's called Energy Industry Fundamentals, which actually starts out at their high school, and after we got the program started, applied for a grant through the state. It was called an Innovative Curriculum Grant, and we received $235,000 from the state of Indiana to expand on this curriculum. So in total, we received $325,000 to get this program up and running and purchase the equipment, which is quite costly. And we have created a lab here that is actually a K through 12 lab where the elementary and middle schools can come out and or they can use materials where we can loan them the materials here in LaPorte County. So our goal is to expose all the kids K through 8 in the energy fields and different types of energy usage so that they kind of have a baseline knowledge of whether or not this is something they want to do or get involved in as they're going through. So we're looking at a pipeline effect of a pathway, a K through 12 pathway. And then through the Innovative Curriculum Grant, what we did was we have trained instructors at each of the LaPorte County high schools to offer this Energy Industry Fundamentals course, which is a basic course that is was created by the Center for Energy Workforce Development, which is a national organization. And there's actually a national certification that is tied to that. So when the students successfully complete that course, there's a test that they take at the end, and they can actually get nationally certified. So that class they can take either freshman or sophomore, and then there are a couple of Project Lead the Way classes, which are pre-engineering classes, Intro to Engineering Design and Principles of Engineering, that we also encourage students to take if they think that the energy pathway is something that they want to do. And then their final 2 years, they finish up here at the Career Center, and they get involved in what's called the National Center for Construction Education Research, NCCER. And that program is also a national certification, nationally certified program that we have done. And that gives the students additional certifications so that they can take those and go right into NIPSCO and potentially interview for a job. But we also, we had a partnership, a strong partnership with the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and so we didn't want to damage that partnership. So the students worked with them as well to make sure that this curriculum was flexible enough that they could either go into NIPSCO or REMC. In our area, we also have REMC.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could go into the IBEW as an apprentice.
Right. That would be a good pathway. It would probably be an accelerated pathway, would it not, for an apprenticeship? Because if they have a lot of the courses that the IBEW apprenticeship program already covers in their curricula, then they say, oh, look, we've got these people are certified. They've gone through the Energy Academy. They have these certifications along the way, kind of little mini diplomas besides the one that they get when they finish up. And they can show, say, hey, we're off to a good start here. So that will help in speed kind of get them advanced placement, perhaps in apprenticeship programs. I'm sure that there's some beginning courses they have to be involved in as an apprentice anyway to become a member of the union. But
right. And our students have we just last year graduated our first class that went through 2 years of the program, and we actually had two students get into the IBEW, and they did. They had a semester's worth of work basically completed for the program. And then the other students, if they want to, they can go on to Ivy Tech. Ivy Tech has in Valparaiso campus, they also have a partnership with NIPSCO, mm-hmm. and they can go on to Ivy Tech in Valparaiso and finish out an associate's degree. So essentially, when the students leave our program, they have five national certifications that they can take with them and work, you know, in industry. And they also have anywhere from 12 to 15 college credits that they also complete in the process of that coursework.
Wow, what a great opportunity for these young people that are looking for good careers, something that they can stay in one way or another. If they go through additional training, they can become even more technically able to handle the changes that will happen in the energy industry. We know that in particular with NIPSCO that they're closing power plants, so there won't be as many generating plants available within the system, but that doesn't mean the system isn't going to change and they're not going to have other ways to take advantage of this training that they get as well. What other type of career center programs that are either in the works or maybe have been proposed are liable to come up that kind of follow the innovation theme that is here?
Well, we have currently programs in automotive services, construction. We have a partnership with the construction or the Carpenters Union, Indiana-Kentucky Carpenters Union in mm-hmm. Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. We have a cosmetology program, culinary arts, criminal justice, early childhood education, and education, of course, is another area in the state of Indiana right now that is really hurting. So we are really trying to encourage young folks to get involved in the education system. We are in our second year of fire sciences. The fire science program we started in partnership with the LaPorte and Michigan City Fire Departments. And the second year, the students get first year fire science. The second year, they get EMT, so they get their certifications in fire and EMT.
That's great. So this way, they'll be fully qualified firefighters as well as EMTs, and they can help probably even not only the two local departments that have set this up, but help any department for that matter too. They could take those certifications and show that we have the training. We can help out any place then.
Yep, that's true.
That's great.
And then we have facilities maintenance, Health Careers Academy, modern machine technology, which is basic machining and manufacturing, and then welding technology. And those programs, welding especially, is one right now that we have, that program is maxed. We can't, every year we have to turn students away from that program. But manufacturing is another area in Northwest Indiana that there is a really high demand. And, however, it is not one of those jobs that a lot of parents or students want to go into, and it is certainly is something that I would encourage young people to consider, because manufacturing, as you and I maybe knew years ago, it's no longer like that. In most manufacturing companies, and especially companies that we have partnerships with, Urschel Laboratories is one that we work with in Porter and LaPorte counties, and Task Force TIPS and Alcoa Helmet in LaPorte. Mm-hmm. There's several companies that you can walk in and literally eat off the floor. They're so clean.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's amazing.
It's important for parents and young people to think about those types of opportunities as well, and those people sometimes are making more money than the students that have a 4-year degree.
That's right. It's amazing. Well, it sounds like some great programs that are certainly underway or being considered there with the Michigan City Area Career Center. We've been talking with Audra Peterson, who's the director of the LaPorte County Career and Technical Education, about, and then she's based out of the A.K. Smith Career Center in Michigan City. We've been talking mainly about the Energy Academy, which is sponsored by NIPSCO, set up there at the Career Center, helping prepare young people for new jobs in industries like energy, utilities, that's why NIPSCO is involved, as well as in the electronics field as well, too. And they, in turn, have picked up one of the latest Innovators of the Month awards from the Society of Innovators in Northwest Indiana. Audra, thank you very much for being with us, and we hope that this great program continues, especially the Energy Academy. It sounds like with some students already moving along through the coursework, hope they get some great jobs, certainly helping NIPSCO out as they have retirees leaving their service and they need people to fill those positions, and NIPSCO always changing the makeup of their workforce as well, too. Let's hope that this all helps out, too. Thank you very much for the update, and we'll make a note to check back with you soon to see how more students are involved.
Have a great day.
Thank you. The Lee County Council could decide if it'll trim back its pledges of financial support to the South Shore Line's West Lake Extension. County Councilman Jamal Washington says the money could be better spent elsewhere. He says South Lake County roads and bridges need immediate attention, among other things. Washington is introducing a resolution that would lower the amount of the annual County Economic Development Income Tax, or CEDIT tax, that is pledged to the South Shore Project from 25% to only 5%. But Councilman Washington told the Post-Tribune that he isn't quite sure if he has enough support from the council members for his resolution. The Maryville Town Council voted last month to cut its contribution on the project from 22% to 8%, and the Gary Common Council is considering completely sending nothing to the South Shore Line Expansion Project as their share of CEDIT money. An energy bill that overhauls Indiana's net metering policy passed the Indiana House on Tuesday, despite the fierce opposition from renewable energy advocates. The bill now needs final approval from the Senate before it heads to the governor's desk. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Nick Jansen reports that both supporters and opponents of the bill say they have the solar energy's industry's best interests in mind.
The so-called net metering bill, or solar bill, Senate Bill 309, garnered a remarkable amount of public testimony this session.
It says that we will increase the number of people who can participate in net metering by 50%.
Taken all together, more than 15 hours, Republican and Democratic lawmakers filed dozens of amendments.
Anti-free market.
The bill passed the House Tuesday.
All members voted.
And should be rejected in its totality.
Tally of the roll call shows 56 ayes, 43 noes. The bill has passed. Clerks shall inform the Senate.
It covers a lot of different issues, but the controversy is net metering. Currently, more than 1,000 Hoosiers participate in net metering. People, churches, schools, companies using solar panels or wind turbines. Any excess energy they generate gets sent back out on the grid for use, and they receive a credit on their utility bill.
This first building we're looking at here has 108 solar panels, each one.
Eric Hesher runs a solar company north of Fort Wayne. On a rainy March day, he shows me its largest project to date, a solar installation at a lumber mill.
Days such as Saturdays and Sundays, when they're not running production, nearly all that power is being sent back to utility. And so that energy is being sent back to utility needs to have a fair value. And right now, under the net metering, they're getting the retail rate for that power.
The retail rate is the same rate you and I pay every month on our electric bill. SB 309 would phase that out. By 2047, every net metering customer would receive less, something closer to the wholesale rate. All told, future net metering customers will receive about 8 cents less per kilowatt hour of electricity they produce.
They would certainly affect the overall payback of the system, and in many cases, it wouldn't make financial sense for the company to pursue it.
Hesher says the bill is bad for solar, but Mark Mazel disagrees. He's president of the Indiana Energy Association, which represents the state's big utilities. He says people, companies, and nonprofits that produce energy and sell it at the retail rate are getting an unfair subsidy.
If at the moment the solar industry is receiving a 300% subsidy and the bill says we're going to transition to a 25% subsidy, I can see where...
Okay, let's unpack that. Big utilities buy power from power plants, coal, natural gas, nuclear, at the wholesale rate. Mazel says there's a reason.
The difference is the cost then for the poles, the wires, the transformers, everything else that it takes to bring the electricity to your home or business.
So when net metering customers sell at the higher retail rate, Mazel says they're using that infrastructure for free. Supporters of the bill also argue it's good for solar overall. Right now, utilities only have to buy a certain amount of energy from net metering customers. It's 1% of the peak energy production during the summer. SB 309 raises that cap to 1.5%. But solar advocates are more concerned with compensation. Receiving that retail rate for excess energy makes solar panels an affordable investment for a lot of people. If they receive less money, the investment might not make sense. The Statehouse isn't the only place people voiced opposition. There were a number of protests across the state.
What do we want?
Solar power!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we
like
want?
This one at Plymouth Congregational Church in Fort Wayne. Reverend John Gardner says the solar panels on his church help his congregation serve their purpose here on earth.
The Creator, Savior's not trying to spirit us out of here. We're here to flourish and to be good stewards of the world.
Despite the protests, the bill passed the House Tuesday, but its journey isn't over yet. It was amended after it passed the Senate, so the Senate needs to approve those changes or send the bill to a conference committee. Then Governor Holcomb needs to give his approval. Several solar advocates are already calling on the governor to veto the bill. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Nick Jansen.
Well, it's taken several years to get to this point, but the city of Hammond's now getting ready to start building a 135,000-square-foot sports complex on what many people know as the old Woodmar Mall. The Carson store is going to stay. With us to talk about what's planned for the Woodmar neighborhood is Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. Mr. Mayor, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Pretty good. Tell us the planning now up to this point that is going to bring us to the construction of the sportsplex.
I'm a baseball coach, so I don't really know a lot about basketball, AAU, travel basketball, travel volleyball, and soccer. I've always focused on baseball myself, but I remember reading an article in the paper one day when the field house in Maryville closed down. There was an article basically like eulogizing the field house and wondering what the future of the region was going to be for travel basketball because that field house in Maryville filled such a huge void. So that's where I got the idea initially was, wow, we should really try to, replace, what the field house offered, and maybe these regional teams will come to Hammond, and that's how it started off. And, in my courses of traveling with my travel team, I went down to Westville, Indiana, which is a mecca for amateur sports. And, I just saw what they were doing down there with amateur sports, and I became very interested, and it sort of morphed it, the idea to replace the field house sort of morphed into this idea that we want a big facility in Hammond that's going to attract teams from all over the Midwest to come to Hammond for a weekend tournament. And obviously, if we're going to get people to travel that far, we want to have a quality product. And we came up with this idea, which is a 17,135,000 square foot facility that'll house six indoor basketball volleyball courts, and we can expand up to eight also if we need a tournament big enough like that, or mm-hmm. two indoor soccer fields, and you could do both tournaments at the same time. So one side will be soccer, one side will be basketball or volleyball.
Now, what will the facility look like when you travel along Indianapolis Boulevard there in the neighborhood before you get to 165th there, in right. the neighborhood of the Woodmar, where the Woodmar Mall used to be? And I know for a right. long, long time that there have been work efforts, successful ones, unfortunately, to try to develop the properties that where the old mall buildings used to stand, and now only the Carson Peary Scott store is standing. What's it going to look like around that area there now, when it's all
clear? Well, when you're coming north on the boulevard, you'll come up to 167th, which is where a lot of people used to enter the mall from, right by the old Kenny Shoes down there. And where it'll be, the new facility will be located right off 167th, and it'll extend north towards Carson Prairie Scott. And we made it so both of the buildings peacefully coexist with each other. But mm-hmm. Basically, it'll go up. It won't physically touch the Carson Prairie Scott, but they'll be pretty close to each other. And, you know, if Carson Prairie stays Carson Prairie, that's great. If not, it could be like a Dick's Sporting Goods or something along those lines. But these two buildings are meant to coexist with each other. Parking will be on both sides of the building. And we anticipate, you know, we're going to hopefully get in ground and start building it in May of this year. And, you know, and about a year later, it should be completed. So
when we're talking about parking spaces, you're talking about, of course, enough to not only still handle the parking that handles it for the Carson store itself, and not going to interfere with the Sportsplex itself?
Carson's parking will be on the north and the south as it currently is, and this Sportsplex will be very busy on the weekends. Mm-hmm. We anticipate, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights, it'll be more geared towards Hammond residents, you know, maybe local, you know, adult leagues and stuff like that. But Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, this is going to be a regional asset. And, you know, we expect to see a lot of license plates from outside of, you know, Indiana parked in our parking lot, and hopefully rejuvenate the economic development in that whole area. And we'll know if we start to see a lot of restaurants opening, which I, you know, if I had an extra $1 million in my pocket and wanted to open a restaurant, that's an area I'd be looking to.
Because
when your team is playing in these tournaments and you may have a game that just ends and you have a two-hour break and you have another game, they're looking for quick food, someplace to sit down and get away from for a couple, you know, couple minutes, and then head back over to the tournament site.
When you're talking about a facility that big, how much is it going to cost, and how's it going to be paid for?
The beautiful part is I've been there 13 years now, and we have options in Hammond through the federal government. Probably President Trump will be eliminated very soon, but thankfully for us, we already committed through HUD to receive a $10 million loan from them for this facility, and that'll get over 50% of the total cost paid for, and the other $7 million we're going to probably have to come up with ourselves, and we will. So the whole project will cost around $17 million, but over half of it will be paid for by an interest-free loan from the federal government.
Now, you mentioned the construction's scheduled to start sometime during the spring months and in about a mm-hmm. year or so to complete. How quickly do you think it's going to take, before you actually start seeing teams play in the facility? Are there any efforts even underway now to try to line up venues for the big building once it opens up for business?
I can tell there's a lot of excitement. I've already received about 10 applications from people that want to run the facility, which is funny. We haven't even put one shovel in the ground, and people are already dropping resumes on me because it's an exciting prospect. I mean, we're talking about, I need somebody that's creative, somebody that understands both sides, you know, the soccer, the volleyball, and the basketball, the ability to promote and pull, you know, teams from all over the Midwest into that facility because we want it busy every weekend. I could tell you that the busy time off, obviously, will be during the winter. So we imagine by the winter of 2018, we'll be up and running full steam. Hopefully, maybe next summer, you know, we get in there and, you know, we can mess around a little bit, but in the summertime, most people don't want to go indoors to play, you know, sports. So they'll be playing outdoor soccer at that point. They'll be, you know, doing other things besides basketball and volleyball. But by the time the fall of 2018 rolls around, we'll be ready to go full steam.
Do you think that maybe during those summer months that you might be able to attract some convention business, so to speak, athletic-related convention business into the site itself? Because you've had this nice
it's
big building.
It's certainly big enough. Yeah. It's certainly big enough. The basketball side, you keep in mind that the soccer side is going to be turf, you know, so
But on the basketball, but we also have the ability to build basketball courts into the turf side if we had a big enough tournament. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we needed eight courts, we could do it. But on the basketball side, you know, it's at least 60,000-70,000 square feet of space, so we could do things over there. And another cool feature we added for the local community is at the old Woodmar Mall, a lot of our senior groups like to get into the mall and just walk around the mall. And, you know, obviously when the mall went away, so did that walking club that used to exist over there. We included a quarter mile elevated walking track in this facility where you could, you know, go in there and do laps, or you could watch the events from up there as well. So that's a nice little touch we added.
That's great. We're talking with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. about the proposed Sportsplex, a huge facility that is going to be built on the land that is now formerly the Woodmar Shopping Mall on Indianapolis Boulevard and 167th. You'll be seeing a big building going up here in the months during the summer, and plans about a year from now to have it ready for occupancy by sports teams, not only local teams, but teams coming into town as well, too. Mr. Mayor, let's talk a little bit here about how things are happening with the Hammond Sanitary District, while we have a chance to get the update here. We know that the city has signed the consent decree with both the U.S. EPA as well as with the Indiana Department of Environmental Management to try to deal with the issues of sewage overflows that are going from the sewage treatment plant into both of the Calumet Rivers, Little and Grand. What's the update on that and how you're trying to work things out with our communities around Hammond to work this out?
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, we're the last Indiana community, I believe, to sign our consent decree with the federal government. And we signed it with the Obama administration literally as they were walking out the door. So I think they were happy that we finally signed. And the reason we did sign is because, we had literally hundreds of clean water violations that they were holding over our head. And if we didn't sign the consent decree, they would have prosecuted those clean water violations, which would have resulted in litigation and possibly, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in fines. So we signed the consent decree. We settled our case with IDEM, with the US EPA. And now we're waiting for what's called a long-term control plan to be approved by the federal government. This is where things get complicated, though, because now that we've had a change in administration, And a president that really doesn't believe, like President Obama did, in the EPA, Hammond's really in a good position. The new EPA, who knows what their view is on long-term control plans, but we'll be one of the first communities they review. And if they change their tune, it could mean a huge savings for the customers of the Hammond Sanitary District.
We're finding that I know you're trying to work things out with communities around that take advantage of the Hammond Sanitary District to take care of their wastewater treatment facilities overflow into that would end up, of course, being into the lake. Are there any more discussions, any breakthroughs, so
no,
to speak?
We're in really good shape, actually. We've, mm-hmm. 5 years ago, there was huge litigation between the town of Whiting. There's the city of Whiting, the town of Highland, and the town of Griffith had all sued the Hammond Sanitary District, which is composed of Munster and Hammond. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, millions of dollars in litigation fees. And finally, we settled our case, and we've worked with these communities. We worked really closely with Rick Rifa over there in the town of Griffith, and we worked real closely with Michael Griffin and Bernie Zeman and, you know, in the town of Highland, and we've come up with fair proposals for both communities where they get something from us and we got, you know, a little bit more money from them. What we're really worried about is, you know, the help from our customer communities to pay for the capital improvements that are going to eventually be required under our long-term control plan. We didn't feel it's fair for Hammond residents and Munster residents to bear the burden of a regional capital improvement like the wastewater facility.
Mm-hmm. Mayor McDermott, thanks very much for the updates, and we appreciate it. We're looking forward to the groundbreaking ceremonies for the new Sportsplex there along Indianapolis Boulevard in Hammond, and appreciate you talking about it today.
It's my pleasure. It's nice talking to you, and look forward to the next time.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back with you on Monday.